And just to finish the passage so that we can take a break, after that lovely couple of lines when he talks about hey, faith, hope and love, he concludes, and I'll conclude. You were running well, he says, verse 7. Who prevented you from obeying the truth? Such persuasion doesn't come from the one who calls you. A little yeast leavens the whole batch of dough. I'm confident about you in the Lord that you will not think otherwise. But whoever it is that is confusing you, and I said to you back in chapter 1, verse 7, where the same translation was used, tarasso is the Greek, it's not just confuse, I mean, I think they could have translated that better. It's use fear as an instrument. That's what it means, frighten. As I've said often before, and it'll come right back after the break, the problem with the Galatians is that they had this wonderful experience through Paul, then they found themselves slipping back into sin, and we can all do that. And when they slip back into sin, they start to think, oh, they thought they got beyond that. They thought that this honeymoon of faith was, you know, freeing them from that. And then they find the old habits and the old ways were coming back in. And then this group comes around and says, I know why it is you're falling back into sin. It's because Paul didn't teach you the law. He didn't teach you the Torah. So they did that, and these people thought, oh, that's the way out. No, it's not, he says. These people who are using fear as an instrument of conversion. And don't think that stopped. And that's a shocking thing to do for anyone, to use your weaknesses and my weaknesses as a way of trapping us into belonging to a sect or a community or a church or anything. What people should be doing is seeing who we are and encouraging that to blossom. Then the church will be enriched by your being a member. Not you become more frightened the more you belong. Whoever it is that's confusing you will pay the penalty. But, my friends, why am I still being persecuted if I'm still preaching circumcision? In that case, the offence, the scandal of the cross has been removed. It is a scandal, but I wish those who unsettle you would castrate themselves. Don't take it too roughly, that, I don't think. In other words, they're talking about circumcision, which you know is removing the foreskin. Well, I wish they'd cut the whole damn thing off, says Paul. But you see, that sounds perhaps rude, or I don't know what it sounds like. But go back to Jesus. You remember Jesus said, if your eye offends you, cut it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. In other words, he doesn't mean literally, but he means if this is your problem, then it's get rid of it. It's got nothing to do with the thing. So he's saying here, these people who are so focused on this physical operation, well, it's only getting in their road of salvation and life and freedom, so cut the thing off. It's dramatic, but it's no more dramatic than Jesus saying, cut your eye out if your eye offends you. Now we move to another section, a very beautiful section of this letter, the final section really, where Paul, from chapter 5, verse 13 on, is saying now, yes, your behaviour has to be different. Of course we want to walk by the Spirit. Walk meaning make decisions and journey. Of course we need to do. But it's not going to come from following the law. It's going to come from the new life that Jesus has poured into your heart. And it will bring about the moral life that you're all longing to live. So he says, again, accenting freedom, verse 13, you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for, literally, sarx in Greek is the flesh. Literally, it means for what you do without reliance on the Spirit. They're the two opposites. Flesh and spirit are the two opposites, two contrary words. So he wants us to live by the Spirit and not by our ordinary human nature that's closed off from the Spirit of God. So They've thought of translating it by self-indulgence, and I guess that's all right, but technically it's the word sarx, or flesh, or human nature, closed to the inspiration of the Spirit. Do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. Paul talked of himself in chapter 1, I think verse 10, I am the slave of Christ. Body, soul, heart, mind, all given over to do the will of Christ. So be slaves of each other. Give your lives to each other. Want what is good for the other. The whole law, he says, quoting Leviticus chapter 19, 8, the whole law is summed up in a single commandment, because they're talking about the Torah. Well, the whole of the Torah is here. Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus had quoted the same text. If you bite and devour one another, take heed that you're not consumed by one another. Live by the Spirit. Don't gratify the desires of your unspiritual selves, of your flesh, of your self-focused, self-indulgent, self-insecure self. But realize that you're able to give love. So give it. And that's a lovely verse for any community that might be divided, because we do have divisions in the community. We have very different ideas about things, but whenever you're in a community and people have different ideas, it doesn't mean that you don't have to love. And if you lovingly differ, that's a beautiful gift. If people differ without love, it's not coming from Christ, it's not coming from the Spirit, it's not faith, it's sinful. So if I differ from you and I'm put you down or behave unlovingly to you, take no notice of me, please, because I'm certainly wrong. I might happen to have the right idea, but I'm radically wrong. So live by the Spirit, he says. Then he goes on. What the flesh desires, what we desire when we're not receiving love from God, is opposed to the Spirit. And what the Spirit is opposed to the flesh. For these are opposed to each other. Now comes a very unusual and I think quite indefensible, and I don't find it at all intelligible. The Revised Standard Version often had sentences in it that could not make sense of in English. Often. Because I worked with that for a long time. I used to tear my hair out trying to think, what could that mean in English? So it wasn't good English. The New Revised Standard Version is. But every now and then you find a sentence like this, and it might be my lack of intelligence, of course. Maybe I just can't see. But the Greek doesn't permit this, and I can't make sense of it. So I've retranslated it for that reason. Honest to the Greek, though, I think what the text is saying is the Spirit and the flesh are opposed, and he's saying this is why you do the very things you do not wish to do. That's what Paul is saying. That's why you're doing it, because they find themselves sinning. And the reason you're sinning, he's saying, is because, yes, there are desires in us human beings that are opposed to the Spirit. And if you follow them, you'll end up doing something wrong. So listen to the Spirit. That's why you're doing what's wrong. Not because you're not following the law, but because you've got these, we've all got them, natural desires that are unconverted and unloved and uninspired and not open to God's Spirit. So of course, if you follow them, you'll do wrong. But if you're led by the Spirit, you're not subject to the law. Follow the Spirit of Jesus. Don't think that you have to follow the law to do right. You're following the logic? I hope you are. The argument is quite precise. Let me read what I've written there anyhow. Paul is explaining to the Galatians why it is that they find themselves falling back into sin. It's not that the gospel which he preached is defective, and that's what his opponents were saying. Rather, it's because there's a battle going on between the life of Jesus in them, which is the gift of the Spirit, and the demands of their broken humanity, which continue to make themselves felt. The Judean missionaries, by that I mean the ones who are opposing Paul, the Judean missionaries have been pressurizing the Galatians into thinking that the only way they can avoid falling into sin is to submit to the Jewish Torah. Paul is stating categorically that that doesn't work, for the law, as he's already said, does not enable us to avoid sin. If they submit to the law, they'll still find themselves doing the very things they do not wish to do. This is because, as he's just said, they are cutting themselves off from Christ. They are, as he also said, falling away from grace. No wonder they can't resist the flesh. Their failure to do good is not the consequence of being led by the Spirit, as Paul inspired them to do. That's not why they're sinning. It is not because they're loving one another that they're sinning. It's because they're relying on observance of the law. The only effective opposition to the flesh is the Spirit of Jesus, not the law. And now Paul goes on to give us examples of sin.